will increase your efficiency 20% if you learn to do the tough things first, the ones you don't want to do.
Ray Zinn now imparts his management philosophy in Tough Things First. In this series, Zinn covers it all, from the essence of human happiness.
If you're going to make it a consistent practice of working Saturdays just because you think you've got to work 80 hours a week to be successful, you're just flat out wrong.
To the downside of venture capital.
People said, well, don't sweat the small things. Well, I guarantee if you don't sweat the small things, the big things are going to become a mess.
And the essence of entrepreneurial discipline.
Don't want to wait until you jump off the cliff to grab a parachute.
Now here's Ray Zinn, Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO and today's guest host. I'm Rob Artigo, your guest host for this edition of Tough Things First. Hi, Ray. It's good to be back with you.
Well, thanks, Rob. I'm glad you were able to join me today.
I was reading today about the failure of ambitious bike share programs across China. You've probably heard about this, the bike sharing apps out there, and we've got them in this country too. But in China, it was supposed to be a boom because China has been known for bikes for many years. And apparently, the companies across China that had been doing these bike shares are failing. The story that I was reading says unused bikes are piling up in bicycle graveyards. Queues of angry users are demanding their deposits back. And it says that it's obvious just how doomed the idea was from the start. The rise and fall of the China bike craze played out like a sped up version of every tech bubble, an unprofitable idea sustained by fantasy, false predictions, and the power of bigger firms. So I don't want to talk about bikes, and I don't really want to talk about China in this case, but I want to talk about that last part, though. The craze played out like a sped up version of every tech bubble with the unprofitable idea sustained by fantasy, false predictions, and the power of bigger firms. So I want to talk about ideas, but first let me get this from you. The short list of pitfalls, this one here that I just mentioned, should be on anyone's short list of concerns at the idea phase of any startup. Am I right?
Right. So, you know, you start out by saying in the article, it talked about the doomed idea. It should be a dumb idea.
Okay.
You know, what dooms us or dumbs us down is the fact that we are so caught up, we're so enthusiastic about what we're doing that we don't sit back and think about the pros and cons. When you're starting up a company or you come up with an idea, you got to go through what we call the pros and the cons. Pros being the reason why you want to do it, the cons reasons why you shouldn't do it. And I think that's what's missing, is that the cons tend to be overlooked. And the cons should be an equal in number as the pros. In fact, what I like to see when I was running my company, Micrel Semiconductor, was when people brought in a proposal, which is like an idea, I look to see how many cons they have. And if they have more cons than they do pros, that excites me. Then I thought, oh man, they're really looking into this. And so I'm actually looking for more reasons why not to do it than to do it. Because I know that we're trying to drink our own Kool-Aid. And as a consequence of that, we tend to overlook the reasons why not to do it. And so cons, of course, are the reasons not to do a particular idea. So when you sit down and you're going to talk about your wonderful, brilliant, you know, earth-shattering, you know, heart-stopping idea, think about why it's not earth-shattering or heart-stopping. You know, find out, okay, I want to find out all the reasons why we should not do this project. And I swear to you, I did that religiously when I ran Micrel, is to why not to do it, not why to do it. And that goes back to the concept that I have in my book, Doing the Tough Things First. It's tough to really consider all the reasons not to do something, because we don't want to be to talk ourselves out of something that we think is great. You know, we're afraid to do it. We're afraid, I don't want to discourage this. If I do, then I won't want to do it. So, because, you know, we say there's so many reasons why not to do something than to do them. I don't want to talk myself out of it. So what happens is that we tend to put down the cons of some stupid, simplistic reason, you know, and then think, okay, listen, I've at least looked at some reasons not to do it, but they're really not realistic. They're not realistic reasons not to do it. They're just, you know, not to discourage me type cons.
Back in the Bay Area, I remember, and this is just, this is not a tech example, but it is an example of not being prepared for some of those cons, which is the competition. Who else is out there? Who else is in that space? And I remember going into a Thai restaurant and sitting down. It was a new Thai place, and we wanted to try it out. And we were talking to the people who ran the place. It was quiet in there because people were still just getting to know it was even there. And it was back in an area that was tucked away, so it was even more hidden. And we said, we happened to mention, and I'm not exactly sure how we got there, but we were like, you know, there's that other Thai place down the street. And they said, what other Thai place? And they just didn't know that there was another, and this is a small community, they didn't know there was another Thai place in town. And I'm not saying that in these circumstances where there's somebody else in that space, that it's, you don't do it, or that you don't open another Thai restaurant in the same area, because obviously you can have two Thai places if the market will support it and you offer something special. Is my analogy in the restaurant here making sense? I mean, is this something that applies to the idea phase in a startup?
Yeah, I mean, you're drinking your own Kool-Aid. So when I started my Krell, my partner and I each day I'd take the pros and then he'd take the cons. And then the next day he'd take the pro and then I'd take the con. And we did that for about a week or two, you know, trying to, you know, talk about the reasons to do it and the reasons not to do it. Okay. So then after I did that, I went out to some well-known experts in the field, people who are, you know, who are very knowledgeable about our industry. And I proposed them the idea. I talked to them about what is, you know, my plan and the mission and what do they think? And it's interesting that they were kind of, you know, I don't know, you know, and that sort of thing. And I got more negatives than I did positive. In other words, there's more people telling me why I shouldn't do it than to why I should do it, which I thought, you know, was kind of normal, interesting, but normal. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to hear them, and I wrote them all down. I wrote all the reasons down that they said why to not do it. And then I went back and I talked to my partner, and I said, okay, here's what I learned. And then he started getting discouraged because, you know, they brought up some of the cons that he hadn't even thought of or that I hadn't proposed. But then I said, okay, but let's work through them. Let's look at the reason why not to do it and see if there's a reason that we can get around that. In other words, we can overcome that negative, as you would. And so we would do that. And then we refined it. I think I redid that business plan over five times. But I'll tell you what, if you go to you go to friends, people who are knowledgeable in your particular field, and you hit them with your idea and just sit back and honestly, without arguing, just listening, you'll pick up a lot of reasons not to do something that you need to overcome, because you're going to face those when you actually introduce your idea or your product or service into the field.
And when somebody comes with you, when you walk up to somebody and you give them the idea, you give them the general concept, and you're looking for feedback, and they do get that negative response, or you get the cons. And like you said, some people, like you said, your partner in that situation, at one point, he started to feel negative about the situation. It's like, if you are going to put yourself out there, if you're going to put your idea out there, it's got to be worth being out there, because eventually it's going to be out there in one way, shape, or form. It's better to know what's wrong with it before it gets there. So if you go out there, and I'm talking about young entrepreneurs here, your advice to young entrepreneurs, when they start hearing the cons and they take it as negativity and they decide, or they cower in the corner of, oh my gosh, this is a bad idea, and I'm just going to hide from it. I just feel like with your experience, some people out there might get to understand that they have to learn to take that information and glean something from it, not to get discouraged and feel bad, but to be realistic and a business professional about hearing the cons.
Exactly. And, you know, in that TV program called Shark Tank, you know, this Kevin he's the one that's calls him, well, you know, you're a cockroach. You're a, he tries to beat him down. In other words, he tries to discourage him. And he does it not to be a bad person. He's not really a bad person, by the way. He's just, his style is just to throw out as much horse manure as he can to see how you react. If you stammer, if you hesitate, then he knows that you haven't thought out your idea very well. So, you know, I have a program which is similar to Shark Tank called Zen Starter that I do in colleges. I have about five or six universities that I have my program in, where I fund these entrepreneurs to develop their projects while they're still in school. And so when I look at them and I'm helping the students analyze their project, I do the same thing that Kevin does. I say, okay, now what makes you think that this product is going to be successful? Okay. And by the way, what's the lifespan? Is this a product that's going to be here today, gone tomorrow, like the Bet Rock? Or is this going to be one that's going to be enduring? It's going to last on into the you know, centuries. I do that. And as I said, Kevin is not necessarily a bad guy. He's just, the way his style is just to throw all the negatives he can to see how it bounces off. You know, it's kind of like, you know, bouncing a ball. If the floor is spongy or soft, the ball's not going to bounce very well. You know, what Kevin's looking for is for that hard surface that when he throws that ball, that it bounces right back at him. And so that's what I like to do when I'm talking to these students is I throw them this ball. And if it sinks in, if it doesn't come back, I say, then you have a dumb idea. If, however, they ricochet that thing right back at me, which means, oh, they thought of that idea. They thought of that concern. And so they're prepared to deal with the consequences of the cons that they're going to be dealing with. And there are consequences. There are reasons not to do something and everything, whether it be marriage, whether it be you're changing jobs, whether it be, you know, moving to a different area. There are always consequences. In fact, there's unintended consequences. So, you know, by looking at all the angles, all the consequences, chiasmus, as you would look at the chiasmus of each of the alternatives that you're proposing, then you can more likely succeed.
I'm going to close this out here with just get some general thoughts in going back to my introduction when I was talking about the failure of the bike share apps in China, and there's piles of bicycles filling up and the words unprofitable idea, the fact that it's sustained by a fantasy. We talked a little bit about that if you're in denial about the cons and you brush the cons under the rug, then you're basically sustaining it by fantasy. And also if you have these false predictions. So any final thoughts on having, being smart about setting your goals at the idea stage that help us understand whether or not it's unprofitable, whether it's sustained by fantasy, and is it based on false predictions?
Well, we've covered everything that I can think of. You know, I mean, the best thing is don't drink your Kool-Aid. Okay. Don't drink your own Kool-Aid. You know, research what you're going to do. Find out how easy it is to get into that business. That's the problem in China, is that's so simple. Anybody that can create that app can do what anybody else can do. So the barriers to entry are minimal in that bike thing. And so you want to look at the barriers to entry. And if the barriers, if you've got something unique, then that's a solid barrier, a patent, you know, some unique technology that you're going to introduce that is going to be hard to replicate. That's a barrier. And so, you know, how what's the barrier to entry? If the barrier to entries are high, then you're more likely to succeed. If the barriers to entry are low, then you're unlikely to succeed. Like in the case of this China bike thing.
Yeah, hard to replicate seems to be the words to underscore there. Now, you can reach out to Ray Zinn with your questions at toughthingsfirst.com. You'll find more information there and podcasts, blogs, and links to information about the books Tough Things First and The Zen of Zinn. Please go to your favorite podcast source, probably the one you're listening to now, and give your rating to us as to so that we can spread the word how great the information here that we provide here at the Tough Things First podcast really is. So we look forward to talking to you again next time, Ray.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. Appreciate this.
You've been listening to Tough Things First, candid talk with Silicon Valley's longest-serving CEO, Ray Zinn. Drop by the contact page at toughthingsfirst.com for more about the book, more podcasts, and links to Ray's Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn pages to keep up with Ray Zinn's wisdom daily.